This is the Advanced Selling Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to help business sales teams grow their business with modern strategies and philosophies. Now, your hosts, Bill Caskey and Brian Neal.
This is Bill Caskey.
This is Brian Neal.
Back at the Advanced Selling Podcast. We arrive in your inbox, in your iTunes every week.
We do.
Hopefully on Monday.
Into your earbuds.
If producer Jill does her job right.
I wonder if any of our listeners have those Dr. Dre earbuds and if our voices sound really bassy.
You think they do?
I doubt it. I bet they do, actually.
Well, I was wondering how many people in the Olympics who have the Dr. Dre's were listening to us. Now I know.
A lot of drama.
Well, it's
there,
over now,
it's
though.
Crazy. It is, yeah.
You don't know that yet.
So. Speaking of, we're having Olympic games in my house, right? One of the things we're doing was charades. You ever played charades?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Kids, right? So charades, you act something out, and then they have to guess. So my son Sam, who's an 8-year-old boy who's going to be playing football this year, little athlete kid, you know, guy, little boy, he's going, and I know this is visual, but I'll try to describe it. So he holds his right hand up in the air, and he starts, like, tapping, like you would be, like, almost tapping or knocking on a door. And with his left hand, he starts pulling like he's petting a dog, like, at his waist, and he just keeps doing this. And we're saying, you're petting something, you're going to do. He's like, no. He keeps going through this, and so I go, Sam, we're not getting it. We got to do something else. So wherever he's petting, he then goes to where he's been petting, and he takes something, like he's picking it up, and he's going and hanging it on the wall. And he's going back to where he was petting, hanging it on the wall. I go, Sam, we're still not getting it. So he goes back to tapping and petting, tapping and petting. It's like 15
minutes. It's
going to
all come together.
Finally, he's an 8-year-old boy. I go, Sam, I give. He goes, I work in a knitting factory. What? He said, I was knitting the scarves, and then I was hanging the scarves on the wall. And he was serious as a heart attack. I thought, what the hell? Where'd you get this from?
Oh, man.
I said,
there's,
well, of course you work in a knitting factory. I mean, what a popular thing to act out in charades, too. A knitting factory worker.
I can't believe you didn't get
it's
that.
Unbelievable. Oh, so if any of you happen to sell knitting supplies or knitting things and you listen to this podcast, my son might be in use of your goods.
Well, anyway. I love the game, what's it called? Pictionary, where you drew.
Fantastic.
You
yeah.
used to draw things.
Yes.
And that is a fun game. And my daughter and wife and daughter's boyfriend here a year ago were playing. And I hadn't played in a long time. And, of course, I'm not much of a drawer.
Right.
None of our family is.
Yeah.
And it's funny how you draw something, and when the person doesn't get it, you start pointing,
you start pointing at it and banging on the whiteboard.
Oh, and that helps.
You get upset.
It's a hammer.
Because they don't get it because you can't draw. That's fantastic.
Oh, my.
Anywho.
Okay,
funny
topic
stuff.
Today.
Yep.
I was listening to, some of you might know who Dave Ramsey is. He has a podcast. He does a lot of leadership and financial planning stuff. He's got syndicated talk show all over the world.
Yep, great guy.
And he was talking about leadership on his podcast, and he was talking about persuasion versus position. And the point there was that a leader can't just be a leader because of his or her position, that they have to have some persuasive charm and charisma and communication technique, because people aren't going to follow you just because you're in the position of leadership.
Right.
Which I agree with for the most part.
Yep.
But it got me thinking a little bit about persuasion as a sales tactic and as a sales skill. And I think we've all been taught that persuasive skills are what we need in sales. And as he talked about the position, I took that a little bit differently, and we're going to talk about today is, what's the difference between persuasion skills and positioning skills in the sales cycle?
Yeah.
And does, if we don't position ourselves properly up front, either through marketing or through how we as sales professionals are showing up, then I think that our persuasive skills have a lot of burden on them to do the deal, to communicate the value, et cetera. But I think that because we're talking a lot about expert strategy, how do you position yourself as an expert? First off, how do you become an expert, and then how to position yourself? I think the more work you do up front on that, the less that persuasive skills really enter into it. I want to know what you think.
And yeah,
one word answer is fine.
I'm just waiting for you to stop talking because I don't want to be the one to interrupt you.
Well,
yes.
Did you not understand that? Let me give you another.
Use a bigger word so I don't understand. No, one of the things I'm starting to realize here, when I got into the whole sales thing, I worked for Procter & Gamble. One of the first things I did as a trainer was I wrote a persuasive selling training package that was delivered to a group of first-year salespeople and interns. And it was all about persuasive selling. And I actually used a clip to tee it up, a movie clip from the movie Vacation, the original Vacation with Chevy Chase, when he's taking his wife's old car in to get his new Antarctic Blue Super Sports Wagon with the CB and the optional Rally Fun Pack.
Did you get that
Metallic
license
B?
Through ASCAP?
I did not, no, but we'll figure it out. We'll work it out. But go YouTube that scene. And I think, even though I wrote that back in the day, I think the whole area and element of persuasion for me is totally misplaced now in the sales process, and I think it needs to be dissolved and removed completely. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty bold statement. One of the first things I'm going to do, and the reason why is I think the whole – you hear us talk on our podcast a lot about intent. And our intent is to navigate through a marketplace and find ways to be helpful and enhance the lives of the people we're talking to in one way, shape, or form. Sometimes it means doing a deal with them. Sometimes it means introducing them. Sometimes it means leaving. And it's hard for me to get my arms around how persuasion and intent, that kind of intent, go together because I think they go against each other.
That's kind of true.
And I don't think I can hang on to both. I don't think I can be persuasive in my action, in my words, and not want to do anything but help the person. Unless I'm going at them and then I'm past persuasion, then I'm to the point of telling them. So in other words, if you're really hurt and you really need what I have, I'm going to tell you that. I'm not going to try to persuade you. I'm going to go stronger and say, like, come on, please. That's persuasion. I'm going to go, you need to do this, and I don't have any more time to tell you otherwise. I'm going to go.
And so if I resist that, then and yet you know that this can either save my life or make my life better, you have a moral decision to make then. I leave or do I keep?
How strongly do I push? But my intent is not to persuasion to me is about me. It's about pulling you to my side. In this case, I'm pushing harder because I have the strong urge to help you more is the idea here. And I just don't think there's any place at all in the sales world anymore.
I had a meeting yesterday with a client and they're in a long selling cycle. And the longer the selling cycle gets, the more likely they are to follow up with a phone call where they start to persuade someone to make a decision.
And it
came out that really the foundation that they're standing on is one of how do we close the deal versus how do we arrive at a decision.
Close the deal means yes.
And so they were using persuasion skills to get them to close the deal. Yes, and it's kind of the Hippocratic is that what it's called? Hippocratic oath.
Not the hypocritic oath.
That's what I used to live by.
Hippocratic
oath says first, do no harm. So I said, you know, first off, if you're going to make that call, don't do something that actually forces your prospect not to buy from you.
Yes,
and
correct.
Forces you away. And I think that's sometimes what happens when we have that persuasive foundation and say, okay, what do I need to do? What do I need to say to get them to buy?
Yes.
And that is where, you're right, intent suffers.
It does. It goes away. It's like we throw it away when all of a sudden we think that that process doesn't work any longer. We're afraid to lose it. All this inner game stuff, abundance and attachment come into play here, and then we start to behave the old way, which is persuading. Yeah. So I've got a to-do item.
Okay, may I? Good. Yeah, go ahead, because I've got a couple.
Yeah, I've got a to-do item. The first thing, this is for the sales manager and the salesperson or owner of your company or CEO, whatever you are, to go do. And this is to disinfect all of your language, all of your training, and all of your material that you use of persuasion. To remove it all, like you took Lysol and spray it around,
like
you kill all the germs, right? Same deal. You disinfect everything you have with persuasion. Look at all of the slide decks you use. Look at all the proposals, the presentations, and look for places where the intent of the statement or the intent of the slide or whatever it is to persuade the person onto your side. If anything is in there that feels or sounds like that, take it out and or rewrite it.
I can hear people now, but Brian,
that's all
that only leaves one slide.
It's the closing slide. Like, would you like a Tuesday or Thursday? Hey. Yeah, you're going to have to spend some time doing this. And this is all about if you want to continue to do what you've done in the past, then keep it all. We're trying to help you be more efficient, let the deals go up, move upstream, get better margins. All those sorts of things come with this, right? So I tweak and change my approach. I don't have to throw everything out.
No,
I just have to tweak the language in it, right?
No.
So instead of necessarily saying, well, here's what we do this, that, we do A, B, and C, I might instead give examples about our approach or our philosophy to A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. As opposed to doing A, B, and C, I give a philosophical statement to it instead, right?
Anything that in your slide deck that talks about how great you are, I think probably goes down that path of persuasion.
Yes. Yeah, very much
how
so,
good
yeah.
you are, how great you are. But your philosophy really doesn't. If you say, look, here's how we look at the world and how we look at problems like this, and we fully understand that not every problem is one we can solve, but here's generally how we look at it. That's not persuasiveness, but I think it's positioning.
Yes, completely. Yeah, and it has to be done with that air of detachment and out and balance. Which means I think this way. If you give me this particular problem, I'm going to think about solving it that way. That is free of judgment. That's not the right way, the wrong way, the best way, or the worst way. It's the way I do it. So if you connect with the way I do it, here's how much it costs to have me come help you. If you don't, then we don't want to do the deal in the first place.
So maybe the underlying rule is create an environment with your prospect where they are attracted to you because of how you think,
yes,
not because of what you say, which gets back to persuasiveness. I've also got one here, and we talked about this a little bit last week, about this idea of why do you do what you do?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the assignment here is write down why you do what you do.
Mm, that's good.
And then go tell someone. Preferably right. A prospect.
It'd
but go tell someone, you know, before we get into talking about the product and the service and some of your needs, let me share with you why we do what we do, because I think it really helps to build some context for the whole conversation that's about to happen.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And it doesn't matter what it is, right? If you sell corn seed, I've got a guy in my peer group who runs a corn seed business.
Yeah.
You don't say, we sell top hybrid corn seed that produces, you know, on average 38.6% bigger bushels and da-da-da-da-da. Exactly. You say, you know, just to get you a little context about me and us, what we love more than anything else, A, is coming out to the field with you and looking around and feeling really good about what we see, just like you do when it's mm-hmm. July and the corn's knee-high. We love that feeling. And we love nothing more than once you get done and we're taking the meat readings off your combine that we can high five and say, look at that. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
It's just such a good feeling to have come and know what that, and then that corn or whatever is going to this, whether it's food or, you know, livestock feed, da da da. That's totally different
totally
than saying,
different.
Right, it's the why.
It helps you position, and it doesn't, and you don't drop into persuade.
Yeah.
And both of those are good. By the way, you speaketh like you knoweth of machinery and these numbers and readings.
Did I?
Oh yeah.
Maybe I'm an expert. Maybe
impressive.
I'm positioning myself as an agricultural expert.
And you just figured it out, Bill.
I did. Yeah.
Any other ideas?
Yeah. It sounds so cliche. I want you to be it instead of say it. Be it instead of say it. And maybe that was just an example because I don't know a lot about the corn business. But I can be in that moment, one, because I live in the middle of Indiana, which mm-hmm. is surrounded by cornfields. But you can go out of those fields.
In the city, I might add.
In the hood. In Indy. However, we're so close to this, and we can go out, and we can sense this. So you've been on a country road. Anyone that's lived in Indiana has been on a country road. You know, we say corn's knee-high in July, so we know what that's like. And we know what it looks like to have those combines going throughout the field. I can be that way and feel that way. Because there's no part of me that wants that person to buy my corn seed either. So it's easier when I'm detached and I'm removed from the whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you want me to say anything else about corn at this point? Or are we corned out?
We pretty much exhausted that.
Let's not do that.
There is no corn this year, though, because of the drought. So
this
anyway,
it's a,
one more thing I had is, you know, you can position yourself once, but it's better if you position yourself frequently
That's good.
And I just saw a newsletter the other day. I probably shouldn't say whose newsletter it was.
Why? Can you hint? Can I guess?
You would never guess. It's somebody that we know, but nobody else would know. So it really doesn't matter. But
okay. They
send this newsletter out every month. They're very proud of it. It's an email. I actually do an email newsletter every couple of weeks and also a physical email physical letter. And yet every article in there is about them and how great they are. And so here's an example of they probably spend several thousand dollars a month sending this out. It's really a well-done newsletter, but it's all persuasive.
Yeah, right.
There's not one positioning piece in there. It's never, here's a case study, here's a tip on how to do the business better, here's a problem that we were asked to solve, and we'd like to share with you our approach to it. None of that. It was all, you know, John Smith has been here 35 years, and this wasn't just an internal newsletter either. So...
You know what I would volunteer to do? That's a great
mm-hmm.
example. I would volunteer, and we can't do this for everybody, but if somebody listening to this, the first couple, want to send us their like slide deck or some of their material, and we can rewrite some of the language in it just for fun and read it on
that.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Post it
up and say, here's what it said before, here's what it says now. Be a good little thing. So if you're listening to this, send us, if you know you've got an overly persuasive sales tool or a PowerPoint or something that your company has given you, and you say, okay, how do I rewrite this so that it's better positioned and it's more about expert positioning?
Well, can we do this? Can you send us an email at listener@advancedsellingpodcast.com with presentation or something in the subject line? Don't send us the slides, though, just yet.
Send us, we'll apply
for this, and we'll pick two. We won't just pick one. We'll pick two or three.
Yeah, let's do that.
But subject line, presentation, and then Brian and I will decide which three, and we'll kind of put them in a hat and draw.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Be really fun.
Yeah, that's good. Good idea. Hope you've learned something today. I have.
I certainly have.
I
love that. Positioning the whole time. I liked what you just said. That's nice. I'm going
to
take that and steal it.
All right.
Teach it to
it's all
clients.
Yours, buddy.
I'll do it.
All right.
Anything else you want to know about corn? Good?
No, I'm good. Well, okay. Combines, we'll have a whole topic on combines next time.
We will.
Because when you get up on there and start reading combine information, that's pretty impressive.
My father-in-law is a farmer in Southern Illinois.
I saw your brother the other night.
He told me that.
I didn't recognize him, but I saw him anyway.
They don't care.
We'll take that offline.
Okay.
See you.
Bye.
This has been the Advanced Selling Podcast presented by Caskey Achievement Strategies, Indianapolis. Join us each time we record a new podcast by going to iTunes.